Poetry is often cited as our greatest use of words. The English language has well over a million of them, and poets down the ages seem at times to make use of every single one. But often they use them in simple ways to describe anything and everything, from landscapes to the human condition. Poems can invoke within us an individual response that takes us by surprise, that opens our eyes and ears. Forget the idea of classic poetry being somehow dull and boring and best kept to school textbooks. It still has life, vibrancy and relevance to our lives today. In this hour, we introduce poets of the quality and breadth of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, D.H. Lawrence, Charles Dickens, Elizabeth Barrett Browning, Edgar Allan Poe and more. All of them are from a dedicated poetry publisher, Portable Poetry, who believe that poetry should be a part of our everyday lives, uplifting the soul and reaching the parts that other things can't. Their range of audiobooks and e-books cover individual poets and anthologies of seasons, places, and a wide range of themes. Check them out on iTunes, Audible, Downpour, or the digital music section on Amazon. That's Portable Poetry, poetry that carries you through. The Poetry of Elizabeth Barrett Browning. Elizabeth Barrett Moulton Browning was the eldest of 12 children, born on 6th of March 1806, in Coxhoe Hall, a magnificent home in County Durham. Her family's wealth was derived from sugar plantations manned by slaves in Jamaica and enabled them to also purchase a 500-acre estate in Herefordshire. This wealth allowed her to publish poems from an early age. However, by age 20, the family's fortunes were to decline after losing a lawsuit over their plantation, but the family were never below comfortable. Shortly thereafter, Elizabeth became afflicted with an unknown disease and became addicted to morphine. Despite this, she continued to write and became increasingly popular both in England and in the United States. Her poems against slavery chronicled her abhorrence of the basis of the family wealth. In 1844, she was introduced to the younger Robert Browning, who was a great admirer of her work, and began a secret courtship, and thence to marriage, and a life together in Italy. To him she wrote and dedicated one of her greatest works, Sonnets from the Portuguese. Although her health continued to deteriorate, her popularity and influence increased as she continued to write and publish poetry as diverse as love sonnets and political verse before succumbing to death in 1861. Today she is much loved and highly regarded as one of the greatest of the Victorian poets. Our readers include Gisela Rowe and Richard Midgley.
How Do I Love Thee? By Elizabeth Barrett Browning. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach when feeling out of sight for the ends of being and ideal grace. I love thee to the level of every day's most quiet need by sun and candlelight. I love thee freely, as men strive for right. I love thee purely as they turn from praise. I love thee with the passion put to use in my old griefs and with my childhood's faith. I love thee with the love I seemed to lose with my lost saints. I love with the breath, smiles, tears of all my life, and if God choose, I shall but love thee better after death.
A Man's Requirements. Love me, sweet, with all thou art, feeling, thinking, seeing. Love me in the lightest part, love me in full being. Love me with thine open youth in its frank surrender, with the vowing of thy mouth, with its silence tender. Love me with thine azure eyes, made for earnest grantings, taking colour from the skies, can heaven's truth be wanting? Love me with their lids that fall snow-like at first meeting, love me with thine heart, that all neighbours then see beating. Love me with thine hand stretched out, freely, open-minded. Love me with thy loitering foot, hearing one behind it. Love me with thy voice, that turns sudden faint above me. Love me with thy blush that burns when I murmur, love me. Love me with thy thinking soul, break it to love sighing. Love me with thy thoughts that roll on through living, dying. Love me in thy gorgeous airs when the world has crowned thee. Love me kneeling at thy prayers with the angels round thee. Love me pure as muses do up the woodlands shady. Love me gaily, fast and true as a winsome lady. Through all hopes that keep us brave, farther off or nigher, love me for the house and grave, and for something higher. Thus, if thou wilt prove me dear, woman's love no fable, I will love thee half a year, as a man is able.
If thou must love me, let it be for naught, by Elizabeth Barrett Browning. If thou must love me, let it be for naught except for love's sake only. Do not say, I love her for her smile, her look, her way of speaking gently, for a trick of thought that falls in well with mine, and certes brought a sense of pleasant ease on such a day. For these things in themselves, beloved, may be changed or change for thee, and love so wrought may be unwrought so. Neither love me for thine own dear pity's wiping my cheeks dry. A creature might forget to weep who bore thy comfort long and lose thy love thereby. But love me for love's sake, that evermore thou mayst love on through love's eternity.
The lady's yes. Yes, I answered you last night. No, this morning, sir, I say. Colours seen by candlelight will not look the same by day. When the viols played their best, lamps above and laughs below, love me sounded like a jest, fit for yes or fit for no. Call me false or call me free, vow whatever light may shine, no man on your face shall see any grief for change on mine. Yet the sin is on us both. Time to dance is not to woo. Wooer light makes fickle troth. Scorn of me recoils on you. Learn to win a lady's faith, nobly as the thing is high, bravely as for life and death, with a loyal gravity. Lead her from the festive boards, point her to the starry skies, guard her by your truthful words, pure from courtship's flatteries. By your truth she shall be true, ever true as wives of yore, and her yes, once said to you, shall be yes for evermore.
A Thought for a Lonely Deathbed by Elizabeth Barrett Browning. If God compel thee to this destiny to die alone, with none beside thy bed to ruffle round with sobs thy last words said, and mark with tears the pulses ebb from thee, pray then alone, O Christ, come tenderly. By thy forsaken sonship in the red drear wine press, by the wilderness outspread, and the lone garden where thine agony fell bloody from thy brow, by all of those permitted desolations, comfort mine. No earthly friend being near me, interpose, no deathly angel twixt my face and thine, but stoop thyself to gather my life's rose, and smile away my mortal to divine. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
An Introduction. Longfellow was born in 1807 in Portland, Maine, then part of Massachusetts, into a privileged background. Studious, he worked hard and grew to love languages as well as poetry from an early age. He travelled extensively in Europe for 3 years, immersing himself in various languages, and became much influenced by its poets. From there he returned to the US, eventually to teach at Harvard. His first major publication of poetry was in 1839. Today he is rightly known as an icon of American poetry, with classics such as Paul Revere's Ride and The Song of Hiawatha. In this collection we bring you further examples of his great talents that read undimmed to this very day. Our readers include John Michael MacDonald, Richard Midgley, and Gisela Rowe.
The Sound of the Sea by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. The sea awoke at midnight from its sleep, and round the pebbly beaches far and wide I heard the first wave of the rising tide rush onward with uninterrupted sweep. A voice out of the silence of the deep, a sound mysteriously multiplied as of a cataract from the mountain's side or roar of winds upon a wooded steep. So comes to us at times from the unknown and inaccessible solitudes of being the rushing of the sea-tides of the soul, and inspirations that we deem our own are some divine of foreshadowing and foreseeing of things beyond our reason or control.
The Phantom Ship. Birds of Passage, Flight the First. By Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. M. Mather's Magnalia Christi of the old colonial time may be found in prose the legend that is here set down in rhyme. A ship sailed from New Haven, and the keen and frosty airs that filled her sails at parting were heavy with good men's prayers. O Lord, if it be thy pleasure, thus prayed the old divine, to bury our friends in the ocean, take them, for they are thine. But Master Lamberton muttered, and under his breath said he, This ship is so crank and walty, I fear our grave she will be. And the ships that came from England, when the winter months were gone, brought no tidings of this vessel, nor of Master Lamberton. This put the people to praying that the Lord would let them hear what in his greater wisdom he had done with friends so dear. And at last their prayers were answered. It was in the month of June, an hour before the sunset of a windy afternoon, when steadily steering landward, a ship was seen below, and they knew it was Lamberton, master, who sailed so long ago. On she came with a cloud of canvas, right against the wind that blew, until the eye could distinguish the faces of the crew. Then fell her straining topmasts, hanging tangled in the shrouds, and her sails were loosened and lifted, and blown away like clouds, and the masts with all their rigging fell slowly one by one, and the hulk dilated and vanished as a sea mist in the sun. And the people who saw this marvel, each said unto his friend that this was the mould of their vessel, and thus her tragic end. And the pastor of the village gave thanks to God in prayer, that to quiet their troubled spirits he had sent this ship of air.
The Day is Done by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. The day is done, and the darkness falls from the wings of night, as a feather is wafted downward from an eagle in his flight. I see the lights of the village gleam through the rain and the mist, and a feeling of sadness comes o'er me that my soul cannot resist. Feeling of sadness and longing that is not akin to pain, and resembles sorrow only as the mist resembles the rain. Come, read to me some poem, some simple and heartfelt lay, that shall soothe this restless feeling and banish the thoughts of day. Not from the grand old masters, not from the bards sublime, whose distant footsteps echo through the corridors of time. For like strains of martial music, their mighty thoughts suggest life's endless toil and endeavor, and tonight I long for rest. Read from some humbler poet, whose songs gushed from his heart, as showers from the clouds of summer, or tears from the eyelids start, who through long days of labor and nights devoid of ease, still heard in his soul the music of wonderful melodies. Such songs have power to quiet the restless pulse of care, and come like the benediction that follows after prayer. Then read from the treasured volume the poem of thy choice, and lend to the rhyme of the poet the beauty of thy voice. And the night shall be filled with music, and the cares that infest the day shall fold their tents like Arabs and as silently steal away.
May, the fifth and fertile month of the year in the Gregorian calendar, and popular for May Day and workers' rights celebrations. For our poets, including Milton, Longfellow, Hopkins, and Van Goethe, much else is on their minds, and it is, of course, beautifully expressed. Among our readers are Richard Midgley and Gisela Rowe.
May Magnificat by Gerald Manley Hopkins. May is Mary's month, and I muse at that and wonder why. Her feasts follow reason, dated due to season, Candlemas, Lady Day. But the Lady Month, May, why fasten that upon her with a feasting in her honour? Is it only its being brighter than the Mostar must delight her? Is it opportunist and flowers find soonest? Ask of her the mighty mother. Her reply puts this other question. What is spring? Growth in everything, flesh and fleece, fur and feather, grass and green world altogether, star-eyed strawberry-breasted throstle, above her nested cluster of bugle-blue eggs thin, forms and warms the life within, and bird and blossom swell in sod or sheath or shell. All things rising, all things sizing, Mary sees, sympathizing with that world of good nature's motherhood. Their magnifying of each its kind with delight calls to mind how she did in her stored magnify the Lord. Well, but there was more than this. Spring's universal bliss much had much to say to offering Mary May. When drop of blood and foam-dapple bloom lights the orchard apple, and thicket and thorpe a-merry with silver-surf cherry, and azuring over graybell makes woodbanks and brakes wash wet like lakes, and magic cuckoo-call caps, clears, and clinches all. This ecstasy all through mothering earth tells Mary her mirth till Christ's birth to remember, and exultation in God who was her salvation.
May by Sarah Teasdale. The wind is tossing the lilacs, the new leaves laugh in the sun, and the petals fall on the orchard wall, but for me the spring is done. Beneath the apple blossoms I go a wintry way. The love that smiled in April is false to me in May.
Late Spring by Henry Van Dyke. Ah, who will tell me in these leaden days why the sweet spring delays, where she hides, the dear desire of every heart that longs for bloom and fragrance, and the ruby fire of maple buds along the misty hills, and that immortal call which fills the waiting wood with songs. The snowdrops came so long ago, it seemed that spring was near. But then returned the snow with biting winds, and all the earth grew sere, and sullen clouds drooped low to veil the sadness of a hope deferred. Then rain, 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 incessant rain, beat on the window pane, through which I watched the solitary bird that braved the tempest, buffeted and tossed, with rumpled feathers down the wind again. Oh, were the seeds all lost when winter laid the wild flowers in their tomb? I searched their haunts in vain for blue hepaticas and trilliums white, and trailing arbutus the spring's delight, starring the withered leaves with rosy bloom. The woods were bare, and every night the frost to all my longings spoke a silent nay, and told me spring was far and far away. Even the robins were too cold to sing, except a broken and discouraged note. Only the tuneful sparrow, on whose throat music has put her triple fingerprint, lifted his head and sang my heart a hint. Wait, 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 oh wait a while for spring. But now, Carina, what divine amends for all delay? What sweetness treasured up, what wine of joy that blends 100 flavours in a single cup is poured into this perfect day? For look, sweetheart, here are the early flowers that lingered on their way, thronging in haste to kiss the feet of May, and mingled with the bloom of later hours, a anemones and cinquefoils, violets blue and white, and iris richly gleaming through the grasses of the meadow, and a blaze of buttercups and daisies in the field, filling the air with praise, as if a silver chime of bells had pealed. The frozen songs within the breast of silent birds that hid in leafless woods melt into rippling floods of gladness unrepressed. Now oriole and bluebird, thrush and lark, warbler and wren and vireo confuse their music. For the living spark of love has touched the fuel of desire, and every heart leaps up in singing fire. It seems as if the land were breathing deep beneath the sun's caress, trembling with tenderness, while all the woods expand in shimmering clouds of rose and gold and green to veil the joys too sacred to be seen. Come, put your hand in mine, true love, long sought and found at last, and lead me deep into the spring divine that makes amends for all the wintry past. For all the flowers and songs I feared to miss arrive with you, and in the lingering pressure of your kiss my dreams come true, and in the promise of your generous eyes I read the mystic sign of joy more perfect made because so long delayed, and bliss enhanced by rapture of surprise. Ah, think not early love alone is strong. He loveth best whose heart has learned to wait. Dear messenger of spring that tarried long, you're doubly dear because you come so late.
Emily Jane Bronte, An Introduction. In the small village of Haworth in Yorkshire, the Bronte family created novels and poems that are still admired to this day around the world. The middle of the three Bronte sisters, Emily Jane, was born on 30th of July 1818. The author of Wuthering Heights, she was also a very talented poet, as witnessed here in this collection. She died of tuberculosis at the age of only 30, on 19th of December 1848. So frail at death, her coffin measured only 16 inches wide.
Spellbound by Emily Bronte. The night is darkening round me. The wild winds coldly blow. But a tyrant's spell has bound me, and I cannot go. The giant trees are bending, their bare boughs weighed with snow, and the storm is fast descending, and yet I cannot go. Clouds beyond clouds above me, wastes beyond wastes below, but nothing drear can move me. I will not, cannot go.
A daydream. On a sunny brae alone I lay one summer afternoon. It was the marriage time of May with her young lover, June. From her mother's heart seemed loath to part that queen of bridal charms, but her father smiled on the fairest child he ever held in his arms. The trees did wave their plumy crests, the glad birds carolled clear, and I, of all the wedding guests, was only sullen there. There was not one but wished to shun my aspect void of cheer. The very grey rocks, looking on, asked, "What do you do here?" And I could utter no reply. In sooth, I did not know why I had brought a clouded eye to greet the general glow. So, resting on a healthy bank, I took my heart to me, and we together sadly sank into a reverie. We thought, when winter comes again, where will these bright things be? All vanished like a vision vain, an unreal mockery. The birds that now so blithely sing, through deserts frozen dry, poor spectres of the perished spring, in famished troops will fly. And why should we be glad at all? The leaf is hardly green, before a token of its fall is on the surface seen. Now whether it were really so, I never could be sure, but as in fit of peevish woe, I stretched me on the moor. 1,000,000 gleaming fires seemed kindling in the air. 1,000,000 silvery lyres resounded far and near. Methought the very breath I breathed was full of sparks divine, and all my heather couch was wreathed by that celestial shine. And while the wide earth echoing rung to their strange minstrelsy, the little glittering spirit sung, or seemed to sing, to me. O mortal, mortal, let them die, let time and tears destroy, that we may overflow the sky with universal joy. Let grief distract the sufferer's breast, and night obscure his way. They hasten him to endless rest and everlasting day. To thee the world is like a tomb, a desert's naked shore. To us, in unimagined bloom, it brightens more and more. And could we lift the veil and give one brief glimpse to thine eye, thou wouldst rejoice for those that live, because they live to die. The music ceased, the noonday dream, like dream of night, withdrew. But fancy still will sometimes deem her fond creation true.
No Coward Soul is Mine by Emily Bronte. No coward soul is mine, no trembler in the world's storm-troubled sphere. I see heaven's glories shine, and faith shines equal, arming me from fear. O God within my breast, almighty ever-present deity, life that in me has rest, as I, undying life, have power in thee. Vain are the thousand creeds that move men's heart, unutterably vain. Worthless as withered weeds, or idlest froth amid the boundless main, to waken doubt in one holding so fast by thine infinity, so surely anchored on the steadfast rock of immortality. With wide embracing love, thy spirit animates eternal years, pervades and broods above, changes, sustains, dissolves, creates and rears. Though earth and man were gone, and suns and universes ceased to be, and thou wert left alone, every existence would exist in thee. There is not room for death, nor atom that his might could render void. Thou art being and breath, and what thou art may never be destroyed.
Moonlight, Summer Moonlight by Emily Jane Bronte. 'Tis moonlight, summer moonlight, all soft and still and fair. The solemn hour of midnight breathes sweet thoughts everywhere. But most where trees are sending their breezy boughs on high, or stooping lower lending a shelter from the sky. And there in those wild bowers a lovely form is laid. Green grass and dew-steeped flowers wave gently round her head.
Edgar Allan Poe, The Poetry. Edgar Allan Poe was born in Boston, Massachusetts, on January the 19th, 1809, and was orphaned at an early age. Taken in by the Allan family, his education was cut short by lack of money, and he went to the Military Academy, West Point, where he failed to become an officer. His early literary works were poetic, but he quickly turned to prose. He worked for several magazines and journals until in January 1845 The Raven was published and became an instant classic. Thereafter followed the works for which he is now so rightly famed as a master of the mysterious and macabre. Poe died at the early age of 40 in 1849 in Baltimore, Maryland. In this volume we bring you further examples of his unique poems. Among our readers are John Michael MacDonald and Gisela Rowe.
Annabel Lee by Edgar Allan Poe. It was many and many a year ago, in a kingdom by the sea, that a maiden there lived whom you may know by the name of Annabel Lee. And this maiden she lived with no other thought than to love and be loved by me. She was a child, and I was a child in this kingdom by the sea. But we loved with a love that was more than love, I and my Annabel Lee. With a love that the winged seraphs of heaven coveted her and me. And this was the reason that, long ago, in this kingdom by the sea, a wind blew out of a cloud by night, chilling my Annabel Lee, so that her high-born kinsmen came and bore her away from me to shut her up in a sepulchre in this kingdom by the sea. The angels, not half so happy in heaven, went envying her and me. Yes, that was the reason, as all men know, in this kingdom by the sea, that the wind came out of the cloud, chilling and killing my Annabel Lee. But our love, it was stronger by far than the love of those who were older than we, of many far wiser than we. And neither the angels in heaven above, nor the demons down under the sea, can ever dissever my soul from the soul of the beautiful Annabel Lee. For the moon never beams without bringing me dreams of the beautiful Annabel Lee, and the stars never rise but I see the bright eyes of the beautiful Annabel Lee. And so, all the night tide, I lie down by the side of my darling, my life and my bride, in the sepulchre there by the sea, in her tomb by the side of the sea.
Spirits of the Dead by Edgar Allan Poe. Thy soul shall find itself alone, mid dark thoughts of the grey tombstone, not one of all the crowd to pry into thine hour of secrecy. Be silent in that solitude which is not loneliness, for then the spirits of the dead who stood in life before thee are again in death around thee, and their will shall overshadow thee. Be still. The night, though clear, shall frown, and the stars shall not look down from their high thrones in the heaven with light like hope to mortals given, but their red orbs without beam to thy weariness shall seem as a burning and a fever which would cling to thee forever. Now are thoughts thou shalt not banish, now are visions ne'er to vanish, from thy spirit shall they pass no more like dewdrop from the grass. The breeze, the breath of God, is still, and the mist upon the hill, shadowy, shadowy, yet unbroken, is a symbol and a token, how it hangs upon the trees, a mystery of mysteries.
Epigram for Wall Street by Edgar Allan Poe. I'll tell you a plan for gaining wealth, better than banking, trade, or leases. Take a banknote and fold it up, and then you will find your money increases. This wonderful plan, without danger or loss, keeps your cash in your hands where nothing can trouble it, and every time that you fold it across, 'tis as plain as the light of the day that you double it.
The Haunted Palace by Edgar Allan Poe. In the greenest of our valleys, by good angels tenanted, once a fair and stately palace, radiant palace, reared its head in the monarch thought's dominion. It stood there, never seraph spread a pinion over fabric half so fair. Banners yellow, glorious, golden, on its roof did float and flow. All this was in the olden time, long ago. And every gentle air that dallied in that sweet day, along the ramparts plumed and pallid, a winged odour went away. Wanderers in that happy valley, through two luminous windows, saw spirits moving musically to a lute's well-tuned lore. Round about a throne where sitting poor Phyrogen, in state his glory well befitting, the ruler of the realm was seen. And all with pearl and ruby glowing was the fair palace door, through which came flowing, 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 and sparkling evermore, a troop of echoes whose sweet duty was but to sing, in voices of unsurpassed beauty, the wit and wisdom of their king. But evil things in robes of sorrow assailed the monarch's high estate. Ah, let us mourn, for never morrow shall dawn upon him desolate. And round about his home the glory that blushed and bloomed is but a dim remembered story of the old time entombed. And travellers now within that valley, through the red-litten windows see vast forms that move fantastically to a discordant melody, while a ghastly rapid river through the pale door, a hideous throng rush out forever, and laugh but smile no more.
T.H. Lawrence, an introduction. For many of us, D.H. Lawrence was a schoolboy hero. Who can forget sniggering in class at the mention of Women in Love or Lady Chatterley's Lover? Lawrence was a talented, if nomadic, writer whose novels were passionately received, suppressed at times and generally at odds with establishment values. This, of course, did not deter him. At his death in 1930, at the young age of 44, he was more often thought of as a pornographer, but in the ensuing years he has come to be more rightly regarded as one of the most imaginative writers these shores have produced. As well as his novels and plays, he was also a masterful poet and wrote over 800 of them. In this collection we discover and nourish ourselves on a small part of that legacy. This volume of his poetry reveals much about the man and his views on life. Our readers include Richard Midgley and Gisela Rowe.
The Drained Cup. T'snow is withering off in the grass, lad. Should I tell thee summat? T'snow is withering off in the grass, and mist is sucking at the spots of snow, and all the thorn mist is a moon full blue. Lad, but I'm telling thee summat. There's been snowed up in this cottage with me. Ark, they're for hearing summat. There's been snowed up in this cottage with me while t'clocks as I run down and stopped, and short days going unknown to thee, unbeknown, hath dropped. Yea, but I'm telling thee summat. How many days dost thou think has gone? Now, lad, I'm asking thee summat. How many days dost thou think has gone? How many times has candlelight shone on thy face? Has thou got more white than one? 7 days, my lad, or none. Aren't thou hearing summat? Thou come to say goodbye to me. Thou wert frit of summat. Thou come to have finished and done with me, and off to a gal as were younger than me, and fresh and more nicer for marrying wi. Yea, but that frit of summat. I want to kiss thee that trembles so, that daunted or summat. Thou art a very flig to go. Dost want me to want thee again? Nay, though, there's hardly aught left to thee. Get up and go. Oh, dear, oh me, say summat. Thou wanted to leave me that bad, thou knows. Dost to know it? But thou wanted me more to want thee, so as thou could let thy very soul out. A man like thee can't rest till his last spunk goes out of him into a woman as can draw it out of him. Did you know it? Thou thought thou wanted a little wench. Aye, lad, I'll tell thee thy mind. Thou thought thou wanted a little wench as'd make thee a wife and look up to thee, as'd wince when thou touched her close and blench and lie frightened to death under thee. She weren't hard to find. Thou thought thou wanted to be rid of me. Happen thou did. Another thought thou wanted to marry and see if thou couldna be master and the woman's boss. Thou'd need a woman different from me, and thou knowed it. Aye, yet thou comes across to say goodbye. And I tell thee, they won't be satisfied. They might as well listen, the nose. I tell thee, they won't be satisfied till the woman has drawn the last drop of the spunk, and that empty and mortified. Empty and empty from bottom to top. It's true, the nose. That one of the men has got to drain, and I've loved thee for it, their blood in a woman to the very last vein. Thou must, though thou tries to get away, thou wants it, and everything else is in vain, and a woman like me loves thee for it. Mourn the cling to the one as that stands, I and the mourn. And the looks at me and the understands, ye that can go, thou hates me now, but thou'll come again, because when a man's not finished, he hasn't,
no matter how. Go then, sin the morn. They'll come to say goodbye to me. Now go then. Now then go. "'Tis ta'en thee 7 days to say it to me. Now go and marry that wench, and see how long it'll be "'before thou'lt be weary and sick of the likes of she, "'and hankering for me. But go. "'A woman's man thou art, my lad, but it's my sort of woman. "'Go, then. Thou'll ha' no peace till t'has had a go at t'other, "'for I am a bad sort of woman for any lad. "'Aye, it's a rum'un.
"'Gloire de Dijon. "'When she rises in the morning, I linger to watch her. She spreads the bathcloth underneath the window, and the sunbeams catch her, glistening white on the shoulders, while down her sides the mellow golden shadow glows as she stoops to the sponge, and her swung breasts sway like full-blown yellow Gloire de Dijon roses. She drips herself with water, and her shoulders glisten as silver. They crumple up like wet and falling roses, and I listen for the sluicing of their rain-dishevelled petals. In the window, full of sunlight, concentrates her golden shadow, fold on fold, until it glows as mellow as the glory roses.
Piccadilly Circus at night, streetwalkers. When into the night the yellow light is roused like a dust above the towns, or like a mist the moon has kissed from off a pool in the midst of the downs, our faces flower for a little hour pale and uncertain along the street, daisies that waken all mistaken, white spread in expectancy to meet the luminous mist which the poor things wist was dawn arriving across the sky, when dawn is far behind the star the dust-lit town has driven so high. All the birds are folded in a silent ball of sleep, all the flowers are faded from the asphalt aisle in the sea. Only we hard-faced creatures go round and round and keep the shores of the innermost ocean alive and illusory. Wanton sparrows that twittered when morning looked in at their eyes, and the Cyprian's pavement roses are gone, and now it is we, flowers of illusion, who shine in our gourds, make a paradise on the shores of this ceaseless ocean, gay birds of the town dark sea.
Daniel Sheehan, An Introduction. It is famously said that no man is an island, but perhaps many are mysteries. Some seek the limelight, others the shadows. In this collection of poems, we bring you the works of Daniel Sheehan. Either little is known of him, or he wants little to be known, probably the latter. His work hints at a great love and a journey that is unknown, but almost unimportant as to its destination. It is a journey with someone and for someone. His words of the heart, his thoughts of the soul. In short, a modern romantic, someone to make the world a little less harsh, but a little more unpredictable. These poems are read for you by Richard Midgley and Gisela Rowe.
I Carry the Cross of a Minor Faith by Daniel Sheehan. I carry the cross of a minor faith, a memory dimmed by burden, faded roughened circles, darkened by the drowsy lighted night. Soften me with hope. Take the sharpness of this pain and blunt it once upon your heart, still it with tomorrow's warmth. But dreams collapse and become the nightmare's hold. Shelter me from harm, from everything that bids me now surrender. Make me whole.
In the Safety of Your Mouth by Daniel Sheehan. In the safety of your mouth, in the harbour of your thighs, in beauty once forgotten, I yearn to live, my love. In the touch of glistening lips, in the feel of gentle fingertips, in the whirl of all your beauty, I yearn to live, my love. In all your pleasured words, in all your coiled thoughts, in the one sweet word, your name, I yearn to live, my love. in lips so gently opening, in tongue so soft caressing, in the safety of your mouth, I yearn to live my love. The Monotone of Innocence by Daniel Sheehan. I hear your voice become a little raging storm, the monotone of innocence surrendered in the storm. As you relinquish childhood piece by tiny piece, you become as you would want to be. In all your actions, good and bad, I see the nature of myself, impulsive, crazed and thoughtful, yet your actions are of others too. But you are you, as no one else can ever be. And in the moments when our tempers flare, I want it all to change. But in your little arms you hug me, and I know that of all the family truths, you are you, as no one else can ever be.
My name is stolen from beauty's own blood. I've never seen your face take the colour of death. I've never seen your dreams lose their final breath. In all this hungry world have you never spoiled for choice? Easy in the morning did you always find your voice. How can you say you're hoping your little world falls down when all you see are the desperate victims without sound? How empty is forgiveness in the alleys of the scared, with confrontation blinded, your weaknesses all bared? The sweet, sad taste of victory brings only moments of despair. Between the spoils of hatred, the wind peels back your hair. Shaken, almost broken, your limbs have no control. Shattered to the minutes, your ghost gives up its soul. And still you scream for pity, the same you never gave. Is it you who's just alive now, or others who don't care? Many questions answer, but none will ever share. What you and truth remember is shallowed by your voice, and haunted by your actions, you lose your last first choice. When you and demons talk now, they babble without words. The voice you used to speak with carries baggage with the herd. What is this language uttered from deep within your throat? Ignored by all who knew you, made invisible, you'd gloat. Is it testimony or torture to thoughts you can't prepare? But your answer isn't given, as no one's really there.
Amongst the Redwoods, Giant and Still by Daniel Sheehan. John Muir has walked these woods through slanted slopes of hill and vale, amongst the redwoods, giant and still. Dripping down amongst the light, Mother Nature's roll call, all in hues of yellows, reds and warm delights. The earth a cooling mass of moss, of dew-wet rocks and slippery stones, the touch of rain and the sound of brooks. This never-idle mantle changes seasons, and man has no dominion but to walk in awe and wondered thought.
My Muscled Soul by Daniel Sheehan. Your love still fuels my heart and weaves me now, my muscled soul, the energy of love, the pain of desire, the pull of passion, a love's sweet fuel, and what was me is fortuned now to you.
But Stay a While by Daniel Sheehan. In saddened dreams less bound to purpose, but more precisely held to anger, I am here, a renegade to cleansing flame, an enemy of soft, sedated comfort. I am somewhere on the hollow rinse of love, my forfeits and my failures shining in your eyes. But stay a while. Hear the words of lives not lost.
I Am What He Writes About by Daniel Sheehan. I am what he writes about. Who writes these words for me to say? Who writes these words, my muse? I am what he writes about. His words he tells me surround his thoughts and swirl and fall as tiny flakes of this, his love. And I, his muse, adored and treasured, sup the heady brew and sip each syllable, wondering why they speak of me. He tells me all he is, what I am, and this sometimes I question. Over years and decades have we strolled and loved and bitter quarrels sometimes made. but his words to these he turns. He lays them out with fingertips so soft, I cannot say they've worked, and to this he would agree. And he writes another line, he thinks of me, and now as I read them through, I think of him. There is purpose in the plan.
Charles Dickens, a novelist, a poet. Dickens is a name that dominates the landscape of English novelists. His works are masterpieces, and he is held everywhere in the highest regard. In his fairly short life of 58 years, he accomplished an extraordinary number of classic novels, especially in light of his humble and poor beginnings. Here we collect together his slim number of poems. Concise it may be, but from the mind of the master, it most certainly reveals a facet of great interest. The poems are read for you by Richard Mitchley.
The Song of the Wreck. The wind blew high, the waters raved, a ship drove on the land. 100 human creatures saved kneeled down upon the sand. 70 were drowned, 70 were thrown upon the black rocks wild. And thus among them, left alone, they found one helpless child. A seaman rough, to shipwreck bred, stood out from all the rest, and gently laid the lonely head upon his honest breast. And travelling o'er the desert wide, it was a solemn joy to see them ever side by side, the sailor and the boy. In famine, sickness, hunger, thirst, the two were still but one, until the strong man drooped the first, and felt his labours done. Then to a trusty friend he spake, "Across the desert wide, O take this poor boy for my sake," and kissed the child and died. Toiling along in heavy plight through heavy jungle mire, these two came later every night to warm them at the fire, until the captain said one day, "O seaman good and kind, to save thyself now come away and leave the boy behind." The child was slumbering near the blaze. "O captain, let him rest until it sinks, when God's own way shall teach us what is best." They watched the whitened ashy heap, they touched the child in vain. They did not leave him there asleep, he never woke again. The Ivy Green. Oh, a dainty plant is the ivy green, that creepeth o'er ruins old. Of right choice food are his meals, I ween, in his cell so lone and cold. The wall must be crumbled, the stone decayed, to pleasure his dainty whim, and the mouldering dust that years have made is a merry meal for him. Creeping where no life is seen, a rare old plant is the ivy green. Fast he stealeth on, though he wears no wings, and a staunch old heart has he. How closely he twineth, how tight he clings to his friend the huge oak tree. And slyly he traileth along the ground, and his leaves he gently waves, and he joyously hugs and crawleth round the rich mould of dead men's graves. Creeping where grim death hath been, a rare old plant is the ivy green. Whole ages have fled, and their works decayed, and nations have scattered been, but the stout old ivy shall never fade from its hale and hearty green. The brave old plant in its lonely days shall fatten upon the past, for the stateliest building man can raise is the ivy's food at last. Creeping on where time has been, a rare old plant is the ivy green. The Hymn of the Wiltshire Labourers. O God, who by thy prophet's hand did smite the rocky brake whence water came at thy command thy people's thirst to slake, strike now upon this granite wall, stern, obdurate and high, and let some drops of pity fall for us who starve and die. The God who took a little child and set him in the midst, and promised him his mercy mild, as by thy Son thou didst, look down upon our children dear, so gaunt, so cold, so spare, and let their images appear where lords and gentry are. O God, teach them to feel how we, when our poor infants droop, are weakened in our trust in thee, and how our spirits stoop. For in thy rest so bright and fair, all tears and sorrows sleep, and their young looks so full of care would make thine angels weep. The God who with his finger drew the judgment coming on, write for these men what must ensue ere many years be gone. O God, whose bow is in the sky, let them not brave and dare until they look too late on high and see an arrow there. O God, remind them, in the bread they break upon the knee, these sacred words may yet be read in memory of me. O God, remind them of his sweet compassion for the poor, and how he gave them bread to eat and went from door to door.
The Poetry of Amy Lowell. Poetry is a fascinating use of language. With almost a million words at its command, it is not surprising that the English language has produced some of the most beautiful, moving, and descriptive verse through the centuries. In this volume, we look at the works of the American poet Amy Lowell. She was born into the prominent Lowell family in Brookline, Massachusetts, in 1874. Although her brother was to become president of Harvard, she never entered college, her family considering it not proper for a woman. However, she loved books and was an avid reader and collector. A socialite, she travelled widely and first began to publish in 1910. Thought to be a lesbian, the erotic themes within several of her poems are a wonderful loving tribute and exploration of her relationships. She published other poets and was working on a biography of the poet John Keats, which brought forth the wonderful line, "The stigma of oddness is the price a myopic world always exacts of genius." In becoming a major figure in the Imagist movement, she clashed with Ezra Pound frequently. In 1925, she died of a cerebral hemorrhage at the age of 51. The following year, she won the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry for What O'Clock. This volume of her poems is read by Richard Mitchley and Gazella Rowe.
The crescent moon, slipping softly through the sky, little horned happy moon, can you hear me up so high? Will you come down soon? On my nursery window sill, will you stay your steady flight, and then float away with me through the summer night? Brushing over tops of trees, playing hide-and-seek with stars, peeping up through shiny clouds at Jupiter or Mars. I shall fill my lap with roses gathered in the Milky Way, all to carry home to Mother. Oh, what will she say? Little rocking sailing moon, do you hear me shout, ahoy? Just a little nearer moon to please a little boy.
Seashell. Seashell, seashell, sing me a song, oh please. A song of ships and sailor men and parrots and tropical trees. Of islands lost in the Spanish main, which no man ever may find again. Of fishes and corals under the waves, and seahorses stabled in great green caves. Seashell, seashell, sing of the things you know so well.
New York at night. A near horizon whose sharp jags cut brutally into a sky of leaden heaviness, and crags of houses lift their masonry ugly and foul, and chimneys lie and snort, outlined against the grey of low-hung cloud. I hear the sigh the goaded city gives. Not day nor night can ease her heart, her anguished labours stay. Below, straight streets, monotonous, from north and south, from east and west, stretch glittering. And luminous above, one tower tops the rest, and holds aloft man's constant quest. Time, joyless emblem of the greed of millions, robber of the best which earth can give. The vulgar creed has seared upon the night its flaming, ruthless screed. O night, whose soothing presence brings the quiet shining of the stars. O night, whose cloak of darkness clings so intimately close that scars are hid from our own eyes. Beggars by day, our wealth is having night to burn our souls before altars dim and tree-shadowed, where the light is shed from a young moon mysteriously bright. Where art thou hiding? Where thy peace? This is the hour, but thou art not.
Will waking tumult never cease? Hast thou thy votary forgot? Nature forsakes this man-begot and festering wilderness, and now the long still hours are here, no jot of dear communing do I know. Instead, the glaring man-filled city groans below.